Everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas, and the Lakers are joined by an actual backup center. They have an NBA player on their roster now.
It only took 10 games.
All right, so you want my tinfoil theory?
Yeah, please go for it.
You ready for a fun tinfoil theory?
Let's do it.
The Lakers very obviously had this hole in their roster. And I was wondering to myself, how is that hole not filled? Beyond, like, potential ineptitude, not understanding the way that the NBA works, whatever. Like, what might be a potential positive spin on why that hole was so gaping and yet never really filled? And one line of thinking that I've kind of come back to on a couple occasions, and here's my tinfoil theory on it, is... There were NBA centers out there, or there were centers out there, but maybe none that they felt so confident in, you know, in terms of actual ability. Like, Tarik Black could have helped maybe, but they'd been down that line before, right? Maybe, you know, if you look at the actual market, it's not great. Even the market, like, as after Brook Lopez was off the market last year, there weren't very many solutions to that role. So maybe with some back channel communication, the front office thought to themselves, we'll hope that Tyson Chandler becomes available early on in the season and he's actually a better solution than the other guys who are currently on the market then.
I think you're on the right track. I think it's a combination of a few things in terms of the rationale behind the why of what you're talking about there. A couple things. One, Magic really loves Mo Wagner, and he was, for all intents and purposes, Magic's pick. Uh-huh. And they wanted to see if Wagner could fill that role. Now, maybe he can. We haven't seen him play in a single NBA game yet, but obviously the injuries, even in the best case scenario, set that back quite a bit. And do you remember over the course of the summer, Pelinka had made a comment about wanting a Clint Capela type? Mm-hmm. And they got a similar stylistic player in JaVale McGee. Mm-hmm. And then I would argue that Tyson Chandler, even though he's not the same caliber player as McGee is at this point, he's similar stylistically, yeah, right? And they've wanted something very specific for a conventional five, which is why guys like, you know, so they want a guy who can run. So I was going to say Tarik Black, right, being one of those guys that they didn't pursue. They want a guy who's got good size but can also keep up, right? Mm-hmm. So there was not a ton of interest on their end expressed in bringing Brook Lopez back, and I think the feeling was mutual on Brook's end too, right?
Definitely true.
Right. But part of that was because Brook can't really run. Uh-huh. And it's all through the, can we play with the pace that we want to play with? I would argue that having a guy that kicks ass at boxing out can get you defensive rebounds, it gets you out on the break, and you don't need a five-man break.
Yeah, it's a little too simplistic a reading of Brook Lopez's ability to run. Because you can always have your five just be the trail man and hit three-pointers there.
And I mean, they were a fast-paced team with Brook last year. Yeah. The year before, when he played with Brooklyn, they were the fastest-paced team in the NBA. So I would actually argue a guy like that does help your transition game. But just in terms of their point of view, right? So they wanted a very, like, big enough to have decent size, but not slow. And so there weren't a lot of guys that checked off every box. Tyson Chandler was one of them, even though Tyson has definitely lost a step or two. He fits the type of guy they were looking for.
So, as you guys can tell, we're going to talk about Tyson Chandler today, and that's going to be the first couple segments here. But I do think this kind of signals a potential fork in the road here for the way that the Lakers could potentially go over the next couple months or so. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Tyson Chandler and what he brings, continue to talk about Tyson Chandler and what he brings. But we also think it's important that we note this very moment, this specific moment, and the ways that the Lakers can go. And that has to do with the politics that you and I, Pete, have talked about dating back all the way till whenever. So you mentioned Tyson Chandler and you know, he obviously is 36 years old at this point. He's nowhere near the same player that he was back when he helped Dallas beat LeBron's Miami Heat. But I do think, though, that when you're in a situation as crappy as the situation he has been in Phoenix, like, that takes a toll on you. That makes you age almost in dog years. Though I think it's possible when you get back to more of a winning situation or a more clearly potentially winning situation, that there's a potential revitalization that we might see here with some of the things that he hasn't been doing over the last few years compared to some of the things that the Lakers will need him to do now that he's a Laker.
Yeah, there it's somewhere in between where he's not as springy as he once was, mm-hmm. even a couple of years back when he signed that contract with Phoenix. There is a clear distinction, though, on the times where Tyson Chandler is trying and the times when he is not.
Yeah.
So the glass half full version is the, hey, he's playing on a playoff contender. He's playing for something rather than playing in a very dysfunctional franchise in Phoenix that has not played any meaningful basketball in quite a long time. The glass half empty issue is that that fits a lot of the guys that are already on the Lakers. Like, I would argue that there is a bit of a culture in place, as much as you can over 10 games on this season's team, mm-hmm. where they don't always try that hard on defense and not everybody is engaged. And does Tyson Chandler come in and just keep doing what he's doing? Because that's what normal looks like around here, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm curious to see which of those two or a mix of those it'll be. That said, the biggest thing that sticks out to me from breaking down tape on him over the last couple of days is he's a good box out guy and he's a good defensive rebounder specifically. That is something obviously the Lakers badly need. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is going to be his biggest contribution to the team, even if he's not quite what he once was as a defender and as a roller to the rim, although he's still solid in that respect.
We're going to take a quick second here, and we should talk about the defensive stuff because that's something that the Lakers really need to improve on. But I think it's something that he can really help on. So we're going to take a quick second and come back and talk about what Tyson Chandler brings defensively and how that might set a tone for everything else that the Lakers might get from him. Today's show is brought to you in part by Mazuma. Mazuma USA has done an incredible job at helping me get everything situated and organized and ready to continue to move on as the show continues to grow. And I legitimately would not be here without them. So I'm going to do everything I possibly can to send as many of you guys in their direction as I possibly can. If you are a small business owner and you're looking to get that aspect of your business under control and organized so that your business can continue to grow and you can focus on helping your business grow, you should call Mazuma at 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926. They're going to get you set up. It's a free consultation, no strings attached, and for packages starting at only $75 a month, they'll figure out what works best for you. So again, call them at 213-947-6926. Mazuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. I don't think the Lakers are ever going to be a suffocating defense. Like, there were some moments last year where you watched them play and you were like, good Lord, they aren't – the team that they're going up against just wasn't capable. Those looks were just – you take what you can get, basically, against the Lakers. Whereas this year, I think it's more going to be – at best solid, at worst, oh gosh, basically. And I think what Tyson Chandler enables the Lakers to be is solid more often than they have been without him. Do you understand what I'm kind of getting at there?
Yeah, for like, don't be awful. Like, can you plug some of the holes in the boat, right? Mm-hmm. When he wants to be, Tyson Chandler, the thing about him is he's been doing the same job for well over a decade. Yeah. Like, it's not just that he's a veteran. He's had the same role on every team he's played on.
Yep.
Like, he's a very clearly defined player of what he does well and what he doesn't do well. So he knows where he's supposed to be on the court, which is something that's lacking on a team that's young. Mm-hmm. And I think in some instances, not particularly well coached on the, you do this, or the defense does this, then you do that, or vice versa on offense. I highlighted, like a mix up between Hart and Kuzma, right? Where mm-hmm. the guy rejected the screen and Hart switched anyway, things like that. Tyson Chandler knows exactly where he's supposed to be because he's been doing this particular job for well over a decade. There are also a lot of possessions on tape where he very clearly is just not that interested in doing that job because it takes some effort.
Yeah. That's definitely – well, basically, so the way I kind of put it – so right now this is per Procedural, who, like, if you guys are listening to the show and not following him, what are you doing? But he goes, per Basketball Reference, the Lakers allow the highest frequency of shots at the rim, 37%, and have a bottom five defensive rebounding rate, 73%. Both of those kinds of things are things that Tyson Chandler can immediately step in, and it won't make the Lakers a suffocating defense. But by just having Chandler out there in drop coverage and forcing them to shoot mid-range pull-up jumpers, that's going to make the Lakers a more solid defensive team, especially if he can then turn around and box out as well. Like, I think one thing that we've noted a ton with JaVale McGee is that he doesn't have a very high rebounding percentage, even for a center who if you're hoping much, box out. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, much better on the offensive end, on the offensive boards, than he is on the defensive glass. Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with him wanting to get out and contest everything and sure. jump as high as he possibly can to contest everything. I think Tyson Chandler is a lot more conservative as an approach to contesting shots or the way he's going to contest shots. And that allows him to stay in more rebound ready positions.
And yeah. He's mostly floor bound at yeah. this point of his career. He's more of a positional defender than he is. We remember Tyson Chandler as a guy like JaVale, right? That would mm-hmm. fly out of nowhere and yeah. swat. And he's very much a positional guy who doesn't get off the ground all that much these days.
And so what I'm hoping though is that like that leads to solid defense, like non-disastrous defensive possessions. And for the 12-ish, 15-ish minutes that he plays over the course of a game, that's all the Lakers need. Like, we keep on trying to figure out ways that the Lakers either lose leads or have leads built up against them or aren't able to extend leads or whatever. And I think a lot of it comes down to, well, they just don't really know what they're going to get defensively when JaVale isn't on the team or on right. the court. And with Tyson, at least now from that position, the Lakers know what they're going to get defensively for 15 minutes of the time that JaVale isn't on the court.
What Tyson Chandler is good at these days, and it's narrowing and getting smaller and smaller, that list yeah. of what he's good at, yeah, fits very well with what the Lakers need.
Yeah.
So I've seen plenty of stuff on Twitter about how Tyson Chandler is washed. You know, if you're excited, you haven't watched him in a couple of years, and I get that perspective. Mm-hmm. But what he is still capable of providing are areas where the Lakers are just hemorrhaging at this point. And so he really fits well in what they need, even if it's just that narrow fits, you know, in just that little slot.
I would retort that if you don't think Lakers fans are going to be excited watching Tyson Chandler play, you haven't seen Ivica Zubac or Michael Beasley be playing in the minutes sure, that they sure. have been playing, or Kyle Kuzma at the five.
Right.
And really that's kind of what it comes down to, is Tyson Chandler is okay. He's gonna, if you were to rate him on a scale of 1 to 10 as a player, he's probably around a 5 or so. But the Lakers employ 2 twos right now in the position that he's currently filling, and therefore he is an improvement. But what that means, though, and to get back to the Luke Walton thing, and you and I haven't really spoken since all the madness kind of went down. This feels to me kind of like a fork in the road moment where Magic is saying to and Pelinka, and they both worked with Luke Walton in kind of figuring out what the Lakers need to do, or should they use this roster spot on Tyson Chandler. This feels like all right, that's one fewer excuse that you have to make now moving forward. Sure. And if you're one theory that I've seen thrown out there a ton is Magic has said that it's an offensive concern that he has with Luke Walton. It's a systemic offensive problem. It's a defensive problem thing. It's a coaching staff. And it feels like he's just trying to find things that he takes issue with what Luke Walton is doing. And now, again, he's giving Luke Walton a piece and saying, look, you can still prove yourself, but there are no excuses moving forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. They've, you know, shored up a huge weakness on the roster, and in terms of like not having the type of talent that he needs, he's closer, right? Like I'm struggling to find the next closest like gaping hole on this roster,
yeah,
outside of the backup five spot. Like everything else is, you know, they're not a championship team this year, but there is the backup five spot was an egregious mismanagement. The next closest thing, I don't know. There aren't a lot of great individual defenders on the team, you know, but you have to start straining a little more to find that, especially over the course of one offseason. They weren't going to fix everything last summer, right? There are valid criticisms of Luke Walton.
Yes.
And to me, the story in this whole thing is the fact that the story got out. But if Magic Johnson called Luke Walton into his office and chewed him out for his lack of organization in the half court or effort level on defense or any number of things, like, isn't Magic Johnson his boss?
Yeah, that's his job.
You know, like, that's his job, right? Yeah. Who hasn't been chewed out by their boss at one point in time? And so that's his job. That is Luke's supervisor, and his job is to help direct things in the direction that he wants to go in. Now, part of this whole game is that you're going to hear things that Magic wants out there, right? And you're going to hear things that Luke wants out there. And anybody who's a player in the scenario is going to have their advocates for them telling their version of the story. So we don't know what the truth is, and we won't. But all told, like, yeah, Luke is having fewer and fewer reason, like legitimate reasons to be like, well, how can I do this well because X, Y, and Z?
Right. And also, Luke doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would just outright throw his players under the bus, you know, or throw management under the bus. But I do think he's fair to defend himself, just like Magic Johnson is fair to put his foot down and tell Luke that he expects more out of this roster. All of that is fair.
You know, something came out today. I'm curious about your opinion on this, Anthony, about possibly some of Luke's concerns being about the coaching staff and about the guys that he's surrounded himself with. I think that Luke is very well liked by Jeannie, and I do know for a fact that Jeannie is someone who really loathes coaching changes and will do it when she feels like she has to, but that's not something that, especially midseason, that she really wants to do. And so you've got Magic out there, and you know, unless something drastic happens, blah blah blah. But I don't know if that assurance extends to his assistant coaches, and how, my question for you is, how valid is that criticism?
We're going to get to that here in a second. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Metro Infinity. I am literally on MetroInfinity.com. I'm looking at their inventory both for new and used, and it's pretty stellar. They have cars from Acura, Ford, GMC, and Toyota. They obviously have used Infinities if you're still in the market specifically for that model of car as well. They have anything that you might be looking for. Their site is insanely easy to use, and really what it comes down to is, having been in the business for as long as they've been, 25 plus years now, they understand that what it's going to take to make the car buying process as easy as it is going to be as possible. So give them a call at 626-599-7510, or do like I'm doing right now and go on MetroInfinity.com to take a look at their inventory. These guys get it. If you don't want to go into the dealership, which I would advise you should probably do that, but if you don't want to, they can have the paperwork and car delivered to your house or your place of work, and you can buy the car that way. So again, go check them out, mention Locked On, and they'll give you $500 off of your car purchase. Again, that's Locked On, whether it's Locked On Lakers, Locked On Rams, whatever, and they will knock $500 off of your purchase. Metro Infinity is, they get it. So some of what I'm about to say isn't necessarily true, it's true, but it's not necessarily fair. I'm just going to go out here and go full fake news on everybody.
I'm just going to lie right now.
When you get back from Vegas. Yes. Part of what I'm about to say isn't necessarily fair, and it has to do with it's an organizational concern more than it's a Luke Walton specific concern. But every single time, there is a job opening out there, the Spurs are seemingly tied to it in some way, shape, or form, right? Some rising assistant, some, you know, former assistant, former whatever. Like, there, at some point, somebody who was at one point involved with the Spurs makes their way into the conversation. Mm-hmm. When was the last time we heard that with the Lakers?
I have a friend of mine who covered the NBA a long time ago. And he always says the NBA is about nepotism and cronyism and very little else.
Yeah.
He's 100% right. I don't think, and this is probably one of the hidden unsung places that the NBA will progress just through kind of evolution, is I don't think that there's a great system in place for evaluating coaches, mm-hmm. especially on when you're talking assistants, when we don't really see the direct results of their individual work. It's hard to evaluate publicly, but like Luke Walton's staff is all his boys, right?
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before, but Luke Walton is far from the only person in the NBA as a head coach who fits that description. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, anybody with a San Antonio background, right, or some like rising stud assistant who's just good on their merits, unless they have a Lakers background, they're not really in the conversation, right? They've got to have that nepotism and cronyism, that relationship individually with the coach in order for it to be an option.
Yeah, and what it comes down to, I don't think we've reached a point where Luke is going to have somebody forced upon him mid-season. I don't think Magic will go that far. Or if it happens, it will be kind of like a, well, you know, they just were out of practice. You know, it'll be kind of, I don't think we'll go so far as to see like Mark Jackson is now a new addition to the Lakers. It'd be somebody who doesn't have any prior ties to Luke Walton or whatever like that. I don't think we'll see that necessarily. But if let's say we do see something along those lines, somewhere in that space between outright Luke, you have to deal with this guy on your staff, and they're there for a practice, I wouldn't be that torn up. Like, they're very insular in their thinking, and they can use potentially a couple new pennies in terms of the analysis of the situation.
They totally could. It's just my concern is be like the nepotism and cronyism just comes from a different place.
Yeah.
Like if Mark Jackson comes into the building,
that's just Magic
because he's a clutch guy, right?
Yeah.
It's just somebody else's nepotism and cronyism, right? And like Luke, for as good as he is with people, that's a great skill, and that's a rarer skill than somebody who's really great at X's and O's. Mm-hmm. But Luke needs that guy on the bench with him that's capable of doing that, who could totally be a no name with no ties to him or anything else. But part of what I would wonder, and we might be going too deep down the rabbit hole, is that if there is a change in the assistant coaches, that kind of the next man up gets put in place. Like, you remember how Magic mm-hmm. got hired, right?
Yeah.
Jim and Mitch were around when Magic got hired. Magic's like, oh, I'm just here to, you know, just advise on basketball. I'm your buddy. It's like, we all saw the writing on that wall, right? Yeah. So, yeah, you hire, what, Ty Lue as your assistant coach or something like that? Yeah. Like, that means Luke gets let go. Like, you have hired his replacement, at least in the interim. So.
Can I... I'll present this. This is kind of more of a devil's advocate point here, but let's say, look, I don't think it's brash or too far to go out and say that Magic if he had his absolute gripes, if he was given no backlash whatsoever, I think he would rather have one of his people over Luke. I don't think that's going too far here. At the end of the year, that's going to be something that's going to be revisited, and I don't think it necessarily matters how this season goes. That's how I'd put it.
That's the only point that I disagree with you on. I think Luke can, like, I don't think Magic is, like, totally against Luke Walton. I also think he's exactly the type of guy that wants to have, you know, his mark on every element of it, and he does not have that with the head coach. But I do think that he thinks enough of Luke to where if Luke performs well this season and Magic sees what he wants, and to be fair, if Magic wanted Luke to replace Luke, I don't want to say he wants Luke to fail, that goes too far, but if he wanted to replace Luke, he wouldn't be giving him feedback. Yeah, like he, you know, in specific criticisms and like, this is what you need to fix. Like when supervisors and management want somebody forced out, they don't keep them in the loop and give them opportunities to correct the mistakes that they have issues with. They let them dangle, you know, and I don't think Magic's doing that. So that's the only place that I disagree with your point.
Well, but what I'm saying, well, so let's roll with the hypothetical. Even if there's disagreement, if there was a process by which Magic wanted to get one of his guys in, wouldn't this kind of be the quote-unquote right way to do it? Like, if because of the clutch ties or because of LeBron's previous Cleveland ties, that Magic thinks that Ty Lue or Mark Jackson is the right guy, and he says, well, just come in and be a part of the organization for a year, right? If that decision has already basically been made, then at least some of the foundation on the way that things are going to go after Luke has been laid. I would disagree. Like, I would disagree that Ty Lue or Mark Jackson is objectively better than Luke. I think that is really worth pointing out as well. But if Magic is adamant about wanting his guy or LeBron's guy in there, then I guess it's kind of a get it over with kind of thing.
I still don't agree with doing that during the year. I think you really undercut Luke if you bring in a guy like that as an advisor or what have you. Like, and we can, you know, if it goes to that role, we can discuss them as coaches and their quality and whatnot. But even if it was Greg Popovich was available, right? And like, we're going to bring him in and as added an advisor, that's going to be something that like draws attention the same way that Magic being brought on kind of put the writing on the wall for Mitch and Jim, you know?
If Greg Popovich became available, I'd be pissed if he was just an advisor.
right. Like, yeah, and even Luke said that. He's actually said that specifically. Like, if Popovich came available tomorrow, I'd be fired, and I would be fine with that, you know? And
yeah.
But you get my point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
in that,
absolutely.
That by bringing a guy like that in, and it, you know, puts next man on deck, you know, out into the forefront in a way that I think undercuts what they're trying to do, at least this year. And if Luke's got to go after this year, like, that's the time to do it and have that new guy come in, start very early in the offseason, get his program and all that in place, get ready to go for training camp and all that. But like, if they wanted to make a coaching change, the time to do it was during the offseason. During the season, you set yourself back so much by doing that and trying to do something completely different that, in my opinion, it's largely pointless.
What do you think Luke has to do to keep his job?
I think that's a really good question. So he definitely has to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he has to win the first round, but I think they have to at least
be competitive.
Yeah, 6-7 games, gave a good team their best shot type of thing. That's a good question, though. What do you think?
I think if they don't make the playoffs, Luke's time is done. And honestly, it would be somewhat fair, right? Depending on, you know, so long as like LeBron stays healthy or whatever, if everything within Luke Walton's control goes in a direction that they don't make the playoffs, then I wouldn't sit there and shed tears about them deciding to go in a different direction. But I think if he gets to the playoffs, I think it also depends on their seeding too, right? Like if they get to the playoffs and they just squeak in and they're the number 8 seed and then go out and lose in like 5 or 6 games to the Warriors, I don't think that's necessarily enough. But if they're in there, if they get to like the 4th or 5th seed and force whatever team they're playing to like a close Game 7 series, then I think that would be enough to also to get Luke Walton to a place where at the very least they would ask around, hey, what do we think of Luke Walton? Superstar coming in, what do you think of Luke Walton? Would you want him around? Whatever.
And that's a good angle to it too, right? That person is going to have some input. That mm-hmm. second max guy, if he's interested, him and LeBron and all of their camps and whatnot are going to have input on that to get everybody on the same page and rowing in the same direction. I just want to say, I don't want to come across as like Luke is imminent, like he's going to get fired at the end of this year. And I don't know. I don't know how things transpire. I do think that tangible markers, like how well does the offense run? Are guys executing defensively? Are they able to communicate and execute your principles, whether they do it well or not, right? Is it organized? Because in a lot of aspects of the Laker games that I'm seeing, it's disorganized. Even in the offense where they're not bad, a lot of that is because they're really good on high ball screens because they have LeBron James now, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, what is it? What is Luke Walton's value added on the court? And Luke has to answer those questions over the next, you know, few months. And I think those things we're talking about are going to be the results of that, getting to the playoffs, challenging in the first round, or even winning a first round series. I think those are going to be the results of the tangible things he puts in place on the court on both ends.
Yep, absolutely. I completely agree. What I'm saying, though, is like if Uncle Dennis signs with Clutch, then you know Luke is in trouble.
Yes.
All right, that'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. By the time you guys will have listened to the next episode, I will be recording that after Tyson Chandler probably makes his Lakers debut. You think he's playing, right?
Yeah, he'll play on Wednesday, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure he will, too. He's a veteran, and his role is pretty straightforward. And as many people have pointed out in my mentions, the Lakers don't have a system he has to learn anyway. So
there you go. 4D chess, baby. 4D chess.
We'll talk to you guys then, though. Thanks for listening to this one. Thank you to those of you who supported the podcast to this point. We'll get back at it again tomorrow. Have a good one. Please vote. If you guys are listening, like, please, at some point, before you can have listened to the next episode, just even lie to me if need be. Just don't be apathetic about this stuff. Have a good one.